Hello, I'm Dave.
I'm Richard.
And I'm Mark.
And we have just watched...
Real
Doctor Who. A Horror of Fang Rock. So, obviously, the Blu-ray box sets of Season 15 have arrived in Australia. We're all quite big fans of the Horror of Fang Rock.
Yes.
42 to Doomsday, I believe it is the patron story of your podcast.
Don't say Patreon, yes, but absolutely. It's Template Doctor Who.
So we decided we would get together at my place and we'd watch the Horror of Fang Rock. Now, unfortunately, if I believe the media, Rob Irwin is hosting I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here tonight. So he wasn't able to join us. But look, the three of us have just literally sat down on the couch, had a couple of drinks, and watched the Horror of Fang Rock. So we thought we'll just turn the mics on and have a bit of a chat about our reaction to it. We did watch the new Blu-ray special edition with all the new special effects.
Yes.
So I'll have a bit of a chat about that. Look, we'll talk a bit about the background in a moment, but first of all, guys, first reactions, Mark?
Brilliant. Brilliant. It was, look, I haven't watched that in ages. It was funny because usually if you're watching a Doctor Who a story with a couple of guys and you're having a couple of drinks, you know, it gets a bit rowdy, doesn't it, Richard? But this story... I was actually looking around and Dave was engrossed, Richard was engrossed, Juliet the cat was engrossed.
Yes.
And that's always a high bar for me. So look, absolutely brilliant and template Doctor Who. And I was saying to the guys before, I said, it's funny every time they do a repeat season or something of Tom Baker, oh, we'll go to Ark in Space. Forget Ark in Space, put that on. There you go.
Richard.
Wow, that was very good, Mark.
Thanks, mate.
It's from the heart.
It was.
Cold and dead, but anyway. Yeah.
Ah, look, it was great. I have loved this story since I first saw it in the late 70s. I still love it now. I've watched it not all that long ago.
Mm.
Look, it was great. I do have a few comments probably about some of the special effects. But no, that was amazing. That is a brilliant story.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I really enjoyed it as well. I must admit, watching part one, I thought maybe this is a little bit more twee than I remembered, particularly some of all the Reuben stuff and all our foreigners, you know. There's a little bit of that. I was sort of like, oh, maybe this is not quite what I remembered. But once the rest of the cast arrive, once the Reuben really gets into it, and by the time you get into that back end, that is just superb. It is really, really good, Doctor.
It moves from Father Ted to, like, Hammer Horror, doesn't it, really?
Yes. Now, like you, I've got a couple of points I want to raise, but we've got a few background notes to talk about. Richard, you want to mention the first time you saw this?
I am old enough. I do remember when this was first broadcast here in Australia. It was the 19th of February 1979, which was the debut of New Doctor Who for that year. And
in colour.
In colour. And probably I have made this point before, but this is the first time the ABC screened Doctor Who with the goodies, which is the debut of Series 6. So when I saw this as about a nine-year-old, I'd just come off watching The Goodies and the Giant Cod, which was obviously the opening episode of Series 6 of The Goodies, and then came straight into this. And as I said a minute ago, I was absolutely blown away by this story because, of course, it was on nightly here, Monday to Thursdays.
Yeah.
I got to Thursday night and I'd seen part four, and I was just, it was kind of like my Pyramids of Mars moment. It was just like, oh man, I love that. That was great. And then they put on The Invisible Enemy.
Contrast. It's the Case of Andazani, then you get the Twin Dilemma. It's a contrast.
But no, I do remember, and I remember actually when the ABC were ready to start the new series, they did do quite a few promos for it. They made a big deal of actually pairing it with the Goodies. The little ad was, I think it was like The Goodies and Doctor Who, and it was like a picture of a couch, and it was like, sit on it. And watch this magical pairing that they just made.
They conjured up.
Yeah, that's right.
That will last another 15 years.
So exactly.
It was 1979 it was here.
1979.
So it was two years after the UK broadcast.
Yeah, that's right. Well, see, we had... Series 12 was on like Sunday afternoons across a couple of years. Mm. Then they had a year where they didn't screen any, and the ABC were going through their thing about, are we going to keep buying the series or not?
Yeah.
And, of course, people wrote in and said, oh, please, please, please. So in 78, it moved to weeknights. And, of course, it's in that halcyon period immediately post-Star Wars when sci-fi is just king, you know, and Channel 7, I think it was, are putting Star Trek back on and they're showing and all that sort of stuff. And, yeah, Doctor Who moves to weeknights and they show Season 13 and 14, which is where I'd seen it, I think, earlier than that, but that was really where I became a fan. And then, in 79, they kick off, they showed season 15 and 16 together. Yeah, it kicked off with the Horror of Fang Rock. And as I said, I'd just prior to that, I'd watched the Giant Cod. And across the rest of the week, I think we saw Black and White Beauty 2001 and a bit, and the Orient Express for the goodies were paired with Horror of Fangrock.
That's interesting. I was just using the awesome power of the interwebs in front of me, because it was in the UK, it was broadcast on the 3rd of September 1977.
Mm-hmm.
I was there.
Did you watch this when you were in the UK?
No.
No?
No. I hooked on the year after watching Key to Time, so I think it's probably watching something inflammatory like The Man from Atlantis or something like that.
Logan's Run.
Yeah, actually, I think it probably was Logan's Run. 6.8 million viewers in the UK for episode one. But by episode four on the 24th of September 1977, it got 9.9. So obviously...
There you go, word of mouth.
Word of mouth, but also maybe the weather turned crap then. But yeah.
So we'll talk a bit about the special effects and how it all looked. I thought that there were some pros and cons. I think obviously there are some new special effects and some that worked and some that didn't quite. We'll talk about that. It was very interesting to watch it in Blu-ray quality on an 85-inch television.
Mm. Yeah,
it was.
So there was some stuff that we did sort of notice that we hadn't seen before.
Yeah.
That was good. And there was also some shots we've gone... That does not survive being on an 85-inch Blu-ray TV.
No, there was that scene in Part 3 where Leela slaps Adelaide. That is horrible,
it
the
went
resolution
all sort of out
on
of phase
that.
Or yeah, something
I
like
don't
that.
Know
yeah,
what, because
yeah.
it's not like that on the DVD. So that's a mastering issue or something on the specific to this.
Yeah, some of the CSO books quite poor, blown up this large.
Yeah.
And indeed, Tom hanging off the side of the lighthouse.
I don't think they've retouched that shot at all.
No, I don't think so, because that did not look good at all.
No.
But on the other hand, you get some very good close-ups of Louise Jamison's performance, Tom Baker's performance. And look, let's just pause for a moment and just really say, because I don't think this gets said enough. Like, everybody knows that Tom Baker's a great doctor. We know he's a great man. But to just watch a story like that and just see all those facial expressions, the way that we're, you know, cynical adult men who have seen this story many, many times. We were absolutely, you know, in stitches at some of his
reactions. We're Ruben's telling him about the monster and just the look he gives him.
Yes. Yes, just that genuine sort of alien incredulousness, the occasional little bit of contempt, the occasional bit of just he's enjoying himself. You know, people are dying around him, but this is a bit of a jolly adventure. It's just such a good
performance. We might all be dead by morning. Anyone interested?
It is such a good performance.
It is extremely good, actually. Yeah, you actually watching that, you know, because you always sort of go from like season 12 or 13, and you sort of forget in this period where he was in that transitional phase before he went on full ceiling.
He's not quite full on Chapman.
He hasn't gone full Chapman yet.
Yeah,
but like this is sort of like he's still on point, isn't he?
Is this peak Tom Baker?
Yes.
Probably. I suspect some of that might be Paddy Russell, because I know there are stories coming out of this one. I think this is the one where he was saluting her and calling her sir and whatever. But,
yes.
And she has said, I think it's in the documentary, she did say that, look, he was extremely difficult to work with.
Mm.
So this is obviously the point where he's starting to flex his muscles a bit.
It's also the one infamously where Jamison basically called him out on some of his stuff and said, we need to work together professionally. You need to stop this stuff and don't treat me
this
like
this.
Is
where their relationship came to a head as well. Yes, very much so.
Yes, yeah, so I think that combination of Tom's confidence and experience, but also, as you say, just being kept on the leash just that little bit, I think this is peak Tom Baker.
Yeah, it's actually the greatest story that Philip Hinchcliffe didn't produce.
Mm.
It's hard to believe that it's Graham Williams. Like, it's his first... I don't know if it was his first story. I can't remember if it was in production. But the first one was transmission. You couldn't tell any difference between Talons and this, could you?
I knew we had a program guide in the house.
Yes.
Here's one.
Yes. Dave on that. No. But yeah, it just... There's no obvious transition between the two producers.
No, there's
I think
not.
It's, you know,
no,
carry
you,
on,
you think
it?
You've gone straight from the Talons of Wing Chun to this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's only until the next story you think, oh...
but again, we were saying this when we were watching the credits. You look at the production team behind this. Script by Terrence Dix.
Mm.
Script edited by Robert Holmes.
Mm.
Paddy Russell directing.
Mm.
Peter Grimwade?
Peter Grimwade, production assistant, yeah.
John Nathan Turner?
A young up-and-comer called John Nathan Turner, that's right.
Yeah, rising from the ranks of T-Boy all the way up to accountant. Yeah, he's doing very well there.
Dudley Simpson, and again, you know, first story of the season.
Mm.
Dudley's fresh, he's doing some really good stuff. It's not the, oh my God, I've got to do a sixth score in, you know, 4 weeks sort of things.
Yeah, actually, I thought the musical score for this was quite understated. It actually suited
it
as opposed to the full-on, overblown invasion of time, you know, and that sort of stuff towards the end. But
I thought they've changed the mix slightly, perhaps, and maybe lowered it down.
I'm not too sure.
But you're right; it wasn't intrusive at all.
No, you do
notice a few of the little stings and whatever, but
yeah.
Otherwise, yeah,
yeah, it was actually really good.
But I get the feeling watching it that everybody understood what we were doing.
Oh, very much so. You know, I think
it's an Edwardian lighthouse. It's nighttime. It's dark. It's horror. It's creepy. And everyone, whether it's the lighting, the set designers, Dudley, Paddy, they've just gone, we get this.
Yeah.
We know what we're delivering. And everyone's working in harmony.
I think they also, because this was the one they filmed in Birmingham.
Yes.
They, of course, were really keen, I think, to make a good impression. So, of course, up at Pebble Mill. So I think they obviously pulled quite a few of the stops out as well.
Well, I remember turning to you guys, I think it was in part two or part three, when the Doctor and Leela are crawling around on the rocks.
Mm.
And I was turning to you guys, I said, this was done in the studio, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it actually is hard to believe. It looks really good.
With the rock pools and everything like that, yeah, it's very well done, production-wise. And it just makes you realise that Terrence Dix knew what made Doctor Who work from obviously, plot, everything like that, but also economics.
Yep.
Yes.
You know, and that's the most important thing, right? He knew, it wasn't like Bob Aiken and Dave Martin said, I want a giant carrot. Appearing in Hyde Park.
Or want to go inside the Doctor's brain.
Yeah, it's like, God's sakes, you know.
We need three sets. Need a small cast.
Yeah.
Mm.
Just let the script sell it.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely brilliant.
Now, new special effects. Richard, what was your overarching take before we dive in a bit?
Having watched this not that long ago, look, they probably stood out. I thought some of them were quite good. Like, I must admit, the shooting star at the start, because that was just sort of a pink sort of blob going across the screen in the original. And, you know, obvious video effect on the ocean. I thought that was quite well done. The TARDIS materialising and dematerialising is very obviously a CGI effect as opposed to the little model they used first time around.
It's like those Mike Tucker things they used to do on the early DVDs, you know, those TARDIS shows, what they're called, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's probably a 50-50, that one. Mm-hmm. The Rutan was interesting. There were, actually, just walking back a step, some of the stuff where Ruben is sort of morphing between Ruben and Rutan, particularly the bit with the knife where Leela throws the knife at him, and he sort of watched him sort of split and then...
That was actually pretty cool.
That was quite well done. The bit where he sort of morphs finally into the Rutan form, that was well done, that transition.
Mm.
The Rutan itself... Look, I actually... The model is good. Look, I mean, the thing that was basically looks like a balloon full of jelly or something in the original. Look, it's probably a better model. Being really cynical, look, I think with a bit more money, you probably could have done better and had a better go maybe at that.
Yeah.
I think
the death scene was interesting, wasn't
it? That was interesting. It just got the big hole blown in the side of it.
Yeah, and a bit of
sort of splitty
stuff. It's like, remember in season 21 they kept using that green like slime machine? It was like they just got that but changed the colour.
Oh,
you know, that the malice had stopped coming out. It's probably the same machine, you know, CGI version of it. Yeah.
So
speaking of the Rutan, it was interesting because I was thinking about this, and as a kid, the Rutan to me looked pretty cool. Like
absolutely.
It was green, it was shiny, it was a bit scary, but you were never quite sold on the tentacles.
No.
And suddenly these tentacles would come into shot and electrocute people, and you're like, that doesn't relate to the
look
model.
To that. Looking at the original one, look, it's pretty obvious that sort of green jelly-filled balloon isn't really sitting on the stairs, but...
Yes, whereas this one, it actually has got tentacles, so it actually sort of buys into those scenes a bit better.
Mm.
Look, it's an interesting idea. Does it quite come off perfectly? Maybe not quite, but it's interesting, it's fun, it's good to see. There was one effect which we all sort of just said, this is terrible, when it was on, and that's the end of part one.
Oh, yeah.
The Mark, ship.
Mark, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, as I call it, the Speed 2 shot. they have replaced the, let's be honest, the paper mache and...
Paper boat.
The balsa wood boat. And replaced it with a CGI boat, obviously.
But it doesn't do anything.
It just crashes on the rocks quite calmly, isn't it? It's like the Love Boat is just crashing into...
There's no sense of danger, there's like ripped apart or tipped.
It's just basically, it's like, oh yeah. And that was it. And we all burst out laughing and go, I think we prefer the original paper plate, you know. So.
As much as the original one is very clearly a matchbox boat, it at least does look as though it's crashing, and you get the actual lights in the background, and there's a real sort of sense of a lot's going on here.
Yeah.
Whereas this one looks like a very clean... CGI
it's too
shot.
Clean, yeah.
It's too clean, I think.
It's
too
clean. I think so.
Yeah. There was one special effect that I completely missed, was the Max Headroom breaking into the transmission from 1987, like in America. Look it up on YouTube, folks. Just type in, in the America in the I think it was the late 80s, 87, Horror Fang Rock was being shown, and there was a pirate intrusion of the transmission.
Right into the signal.
Yes,
that's
and
right.
Yeah, it's actually quite scary, but yeah, it's a shame they didn't put that on the DVD. But they did put the Dennis Fisher doll promos, which I enjoyed watching again.
Yeah, for £3.49 through to £4.20 or whatever
it was.
£5. My God.
Yeah, my mate's parents are rich.
The spaceship at the end, I think, was a definite improvement.
Oh, yes.
That was just almost
studio
yes.
light.
Yeah, it was actually really cool, wasn't it? Yeah. On the whole, though, I think it enhance the enjoyment of the story for me? Not really. As I said, some shots are cool, like Ruben sort of splitting. Spoilers. But on the whole, do they work as well as some of the other ones I've seen? Probably not.
No. Look, I think you're having such a good time with the story. Yeah, look, we were sort of picking some of them up as we went through, but I suspect that's probably also because we're extremely familiar with them.
Extremely familiar.
Yeah. It's like, and just for listeners, we kept saying, well, that's new. That's new. That's new.
And then Tom hanging off the side of the lighthouse.
It's like,
that's not.
It's like, oh. Yeah, so that's the great thing of watching Doctor Who with Doctor Who fans. You can pick it out, can't you?
And we did all cheer when Adelaide got killed.
But Dave, you actually mentioned something that you hadn't seen or hadn't noticed before on that DVD. Do you want to talk about that?
In part four, where the Doctor goes outside the window in Ruben's cabin, I knew that he was hiding from the Ruben before, but I hadn't realised that he went and found the transmitting device that was outside the window.
It's a bit where he's going up and trying to reach above the top of the windowsill and whatever.
Yeah, I thought he was just trying to get in, but again, exactly. Because we're watching it on a nice cleaned up shot on a big TV, I actually for the first time saw that antenna that he brought.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's where he got that thing from. So that was interesting. But I mean, it's not a story that is carried by the special effects at all.
No, absolutely not. No. It is as we have called it, template Who. It is that.
It's top shelf, isn't it? Really,
enclosed environment, diminishing cast.
Yeah,
that it is a classic. I love it.
Yeah,
and just let's talk about the cast quickly as well. It's amazing because we talk about people like Robert Holmes and Chris Boucher who can put together characters really, really well. But let's not underestimate what Terrence Dix does here. You know,
spot on.
You know instantly what sort of a man Lord Palmerdale is.
Yeah,
you know what sort of a man Skinsale is. You know what sort of a man Harker is.
Yeah.
You know what sort of a man Ruben is. You know, it's just really, really effectively done.
Yeah.
And the actors and the actress get that perfectly as well.
Yeah.
And they just inhabit those characters. And so they actually believe people. And I mean, Mark, you've seen this many, many times before, and you're a cold-hearted man. Mm. But you know, when a couple of the characters got bumped off, you're like, oh, I really like
them. Yeah, like Vince and like Harker. Those good old working-class boys, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The pumpers. I mean, even the Colonel. But the others can go to hell. But the other, you know, the Colonel, that sort of stuff. But yeah, actually, they're really good characters. Great characterisations. And nobody walks out of that alive. It's like the Die Hard of Doctor Who, isn't it, really? I think it's only Leela and the Doctor has escaped.
Even Eric Say would watch this and then thought, that's how you do it. You kill everybody.
But not as well. Yeah.
Louise Jamison.
Great.
Yeah, she's
really
great.
Good at this.
She is.
Really good. When Tom actually starts looking at her, obviously you can tell the pre-Barney scenes to the after-Barney scenes, but there's some really good interaction with her, and you actually realise she was actually really good.
It's good. It's better than watching like Tom and Lala in season 18.
Oh, from opposite corners of the studio.
Edric's sort of in the middle, you know. Why are they fighting?
It is like watching a bad domestic. Yeah, Louise Jamison was great.
Yeah.
It was really good and worked really well with Tom Baker. It'll be interesting to see when I watch the rest of the season how that interaction does it. I can't really remember most of season 15, so it's going to be interesting for me watching, does that interaction improve from there, or does it, obviously the writing dictates as well, the portrayal as well.
I think so, but I would have thought, given they're sort of thrown together for, you know, however many remaining weeks they had in the filming block, you would think something like that hopefully would sort of be cathartic, that, you know, now we can, we've expressed our grievances and now we can move on.
Yeah.
So for you guys, do you find that Blu-ray sets coming out are a bit of an excuse and opportunity to go back and watch these stories
absolutely. It's a good excuse.
It is a very good excuse, and watch it in a sequential order where the DVD range and the VHS range were very, one minute you got, you know, Mark of the Rider, next minute you got Tom of the Rider. The contrasts were amazing you know, in different, in bad
both
ways.
Rubbish.
No. Yeah, exactly. Where this, you can just see the whole totality of it and just watch it and just consume it, and then you can see the, you know, the pros and cons of the season.
Just watch the budget disappear.
This
is coming from the man who wanted to put on Underworld after we finished watching this.
Well, only we'll have to get a booze order in if we want to get through Underworld. Yeah.
So just as a bit of a tangent here, Mark. We've now both watched the Graham Williams doco.
Yes.
That Rob, on our last flagship episode, did really talk up, and he said, when you get the set, make sure it's the first thing you watch. And so I, you know, did what my podcast colleague told me, and I did go and watch it the other night. That is a superb documentary, isn't it?
It's one of the best ones I think they've done. And, yeah, absolutely. It's interesting, because I remember when Graham Williams did die, it was a shooting accident and all sort of stuff.
That was definitely the reporting.
That was the reporting. Yes, and I think it was really until the J&T book that Richard Marsden sort of said that J&T sort of knew that Graham was going through a bad time and sort of helped him and, you know, gave him Nightmare Fair. But you don't realise the depths of the man and what he was going through.
Mm.
But also, it's great to see his work being appreciated in a new light. Because I think there was, especially in the late 80s, or actually in the 80s, he was reviled. His work was reviled.
Yeah.
Especially when, you know, J&T was on a crest of a wave in the early 80s, and, you know, there sort of, there was some really disparaging comments.
You know, you think of, you've sort of sat through Creature from the Pit and Nightmare of Eden and Horns of Nymon.
Yeah.
And then you go into the Leisure Hive.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you are effectively watching a completely different series.
But it's gloss over. It's gloss over substance.
It is, but I do remember when I sat down to about 12 or 13.
Yeah.
Because again, we drifted out to, you know, like a year behind or 2 years behind the UK again.
Yeah.
I do remember when I sat down to watch the Leisure, I was just like, oh my god, this is so different.
Yeah.
A bit like sort of going from season 3 into season 4 of Blake 7. It was just sort of like, oh my god.
And the thing to remember is that we didn't have a novelization of City of Death.
No.
And season 17 wasn't repeated out here for a long time.
I think it was like late 80s, I think it was in the afternoons.
When they did those afternoon shows.
Yeah, so we didn't see season 17 for a long time. We didn't have the novel of City of Death to sort of anchor that season.
Yeah.
And so, look, I think people now are really going back. And look, season 17's got highs and lows.
Mm.
I think season 16's really being appreciated a lot
more now.
Yeah,
it's very good, yeah.
And look, we just said that Horror of Fang Rock is Stone Cold classic.
Mm.
So yeah, that doco is definitely something worth seeing. And we were discussing it before we turned the mics on, actually, before we watched Horror. And we did sort of say, you know, a lot of Tom's life over the last 20 years has been defined in many ways by him making amends. And
I think he
talks about how pleased he was to make amends with J&T before he died.
Mm.
How only a couple of years before Nick Courtney died, Tom Baker sort of made amends with him. And I think it is very evident that Tom regrets he didn't have the chance to do that with Graham Williams, who probably got the worst end of the stick from Tom.
Absolutely.
Of anybody.
Indeed. Well, no support from the BBC at all.
No. He's a star.
Mm.
Get on and do it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But look, it's a very moving documentary, and having his family in there as well obviously was sort of added a bit of more resonance and friends talking about the man. But I hope if anything, his work is appreciated more. I mean, you know, not... I mean, some people do bag, you know, Doctor Who quite a bit, Richard. But, you know, I don't think many, you know, many producers go in there trying to make bad Doctor Who. And I don't think he did. I mean, his era is very imaginative.
Mm.
Like, it's more diverse. Yeah, it's more diverse than, you know, some of the Hinchcliffe stuff, and certainly some of the J&T stuff.
We've
seen, you know,
the Hinchcliffe stuff has a very definite template. I mean, look, it is an amazing template.
But it has got
a formula
repetitive.
To it.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And also, when I reflect upon a number of stories that I just didn't appreciate as a boy, but now as an adult I absolutely love, a lot of them are in the Williams era, because they are those very literary-inspired ones. Stuff like the Rybos Operation, Androids of Tara... I just didn't get anything out of them at all when I was about 6.
Mm.
But now I think they're brilliant.
And a lot of his era is fun.
It's actually
fun to watch, where, like we've done tonight, you can get a couple of 28 ciders and a couple of bags of chips and whatever and sit down and watch it and have a good time watching it.
Yeah.
You know, so you're not sort of sitting there. If it was Time Flight, Dave, it would be a different situation. You'd probably have to go for stronger stuff, you know, usually in plastic bags. But Graham Williams stuff is fun, and the documentary, I hope, just shines a new light on the man and his work.
I'm looking forward to watching it.
Yeah,
no, absolutely. So look, I think we've all had a lot of fun here watching the Horror of Fangrock.
Absolutely.
We have.
The four episodes just flew by without a break.
Absolutely.
And look, again, we've seen these, what, 20, 30 times each? And yet we were still there absolutely engrossed.
Yep. And it takes a lot for a bunch of old men to sit there and just be engrossed watching TV these days.
Yep.
So absolutely. Thank you, Dave, for having us over. And yeah, it was great fun. And now, listeners, it's Underworld time.
Yep, absolutely. We're going to turn the mic off and we're going to go watch Underworld. And we'll be back with more of the Doctor Who show very shortly. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Sitting in the den, cracking open ciders, ready for the weekend. Pull out the Blu-ray, what's it gonna be? Horror of Fangrock, that's the one to see. The Fourth Doctor's witty Leela's full of fight. They're up against a rootin' it for a real fright. The tension's building, the fog rolls in, but with their ciders.